This is The Fantasy Show with Sho Ali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Sunday morning, and you know what that means. It's time for The Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sho Ali, Matt Marchese alongside you today. Good morning, Canada, as we get set for Week 13 across the NFL. Injury news and notes, start sits for every single game, and of course, your questions on the People's Text Line at 590-590. Name and location, please. They're even more important this week as we get into win or go home situations in a lot of leagues. Matt, for me, I need a win in one league. Our wild card games start next week. Six teams make the playoffs in this league. Two teams get byes. And then it's like the 3 seed plays the 6 seed, the 4 seed plays the 5 seed. So I have the 3rd highest points for, but like the 2nd highest points against. So I imagine a lot of people are in the same boat this year when it comes to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's been one of those weird years, right? Where, well, I mean, we can kind of say that every year has been weird, but the way the offenses have kind of struggled in patches over the course of the year and some big surprises of particular players that have struggled, I can't say that I'm all that surprised that this has happened, Sho, because, you know, teams that you expect to beat every week, like, you know, maybe somebody's starting Mac Hollins 1 week and then he goes off for, you know, whatever it was the 1 week, like 140 yards and a touchdown. You're like, yeah, I got beat by Mac Hollins in like week 6 of the playoffs. And that's just the way, or week 6 of the season. That's just the way the year's gone. So I do wish you the best of luck. I'm battling in a few leagues to try and get in. Hasn't been an overly fruitful fantasy season, but we soldier on here.
Yeah, we soldier on. You know, it's funny that, this leads me to the Bills-Patriots game on Thursday night, because I didn't want to talk about this a little bit, but it's odd to feel, maybe disappointed is the right word, right? But still, it's odd to feel that way, because Stephon Diggs, I believe, ended the game with about 92 yards, 92 or 93 yards. He had 7 catches. He had a touchdown as well. And in that game, I believe he had like a 40 or a 50-yard bomb from Josh Allen called back due to penalty. And I mean, you know, you saw the replay and I was like, okay, that's a penalty. I get it. But at the same time, he had a 40 or 50-yard bomb called back in a game he already finished with 7 catches, around 100 yards and a touchdown. And I played Diggs in a couple of leagues this week, including that league I need the win in. And again, like, he finished with like 18 points. So I can't be too complaining about it, because in the end, he beat the projections. He gives you almost 20 points. He is the wide receiver 1. And yet, against the Patriots defense that honestly, like, looked okay against the Buffalo Bills. It's just their offense was absolutely abysmal, and they just could not get anything going. But it's funny to think that 18 points in half PPR, despite a result you take, kind of had me feeling like, oh, I wanted more. I wanted a little bit more.
You always want more. And it's more so when you have a situation like that where you can feel it within your grasp, the touchdown, the 40-yard touchdown, and then it gets called back and you're like, oh, man, like, I could have been smooth sailing the rest of the week, could have put my feet up on Sunday, Stephon Diggs, you know, with 30 points, and oh, yeah, I'm in wonderful shape here, and this is great. And then it gets called back. And that is kind of the epitome of the fantasy ups and downs in one moment, especially because of the importance of this week and eventually next week in getting as many points as humanly possible. So, yeah, no, I totally felt your pain. I also felt your pain because as a Bills fan, I was like, oh, really? Like, the offense hasn't been going all that great. And it's like, that was such a great pass by Allen on the run, throws it over the defender, and Diggs is in the, like, I mean, it was just like, really? Do we really need this? But there were some bright spots, and maybe a big surprise as one of them, Sho.
Okay, why don't you get to your surprise? Because I want to kind of complain about what to do about Gabe Davis for the rest of the season, but I'm not sure if that's your surprise or not.
No, that isn't a surprise, because I do feel like we're trending in a certain direction with him. How about my guy, James Cook? Over 100 all-purpose yards, and he had 20 touches in that game. When was the last time we've seen a Buffalo Bill get 20 touches? I mean, I'm sure Devin Singletary did it at the end of last season, but it felt like James Cook just made the most of every single opportunity. He looked so much more explosive than Devin Singletary, and it does make you wonder why in the hell they acquired Nyheim Hines. It was almost as if James Cook said, oh, that you went to go get the guy to replace me? I don't think so. He's had over 80 yards in two of the last 3 weeks, all purpose. He's a threat to catch the ball out of the backfield. And dare I say, you know, they've been looking for someone to replace Cole Beasley. Like, we can say whatever we want about Cole Beasley, but at the end of the day, he was a productive Buffalo Bill. And the offense has kind of struggled without him with those short yardage plays. And Devin Singletary's been okay, but he's had a couple of egregious drops the last 2 weeks. And James Cook has really filled in that short passing game, which has given the Bills an element of play that they haven't had basically since Cole Beasley left. And the other thing that's really important about having James Cook and being able to produce is, Joe, you watch that game. How many deep shots have they taken? Like, that was a staple of this offense, and we have seen that in limited fashion over the course of this season. Some of it has to do with Josh Allen's elbow. Some of it has to do with teams have just taken that away from them, and they've just worked underneath like crazy. And it's not pretty, but it sure as hell works.
It does, yeah. Six catches for 41 yards for James Cook, and 14 carries for 64 yards. Devin Singletary had 13 carries for 51 yards. And a touchdown. Here's my question about the Bills running game, because again, something we talk about a lot, and simply that Devin Singletary still had the 13 carries. And I know he wasn't as quite as efficient as James Cook, 4.6 yards a carry for Cook, 3.9 yards a carry for Singletary, despite Singletary getting the TD. So if you started Devin Singletary on Thursday, I think you're feeling pretty good about it, considering the Patriots defense and everything that goes along with it. But at the same time, like, I wonder how much the usage of James Cook was influenced by the fact that they were up basically the entire game. Like, I wonder how much of it was just, we need to grind the clock out against an offense that we don't want to have possess the ball too many times, because even when they do, they are not very good, referring to the Patriots offense, obviously. So I'm curious, like in shootout games where the Bills need to score in chunk plays more often than not, I'm curious where you fall on whether or not Cook will still be used to the same degree.
It's interesting, and the only reason why I say I think he will be involved is just because of how good he's been in the passing game. He's the clear passing down back here. Like, there were times when James Cook and Nyheim Hines, or Nyheim Hines and Devin Singletary, were on the field at the same time. So that did happen, but at the end of the day, Cook is that receiving back that we've been waiting to see in this offense, and I think there's value here because of the reasons that I mentioned with Cole Beasley. We talked about the rookie learning curve a lot over the course of this season on this show, and you're starting to see it. You're starting to see, you know, like Garrett Wilson has become an every-week starter for the Jets. George Pickens is an every-week starter for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Kenneth Walker got an opportunity, and he's been one of the best running backs since taking over the RB1 role. I think it's just part of the learning curve. And I think we're at that point where the Buffalo Bills have seen what they can get out of James Cook, and they like what they've seen, which means they're going to use him more. But, Sho, the biggest key to all of this is, what is the one thing that we have talked about with the Buffalo Bills in terms of real football? Something they haven't been able to do when they've had leads is grind out clock. For a team that is now 9-3, and they are up in more games than they are not, I think that there's some value there for a guy like James Cook, because I do believe that they want to use these running backs, and maybe that's part of the reason why they acquired Nyheim Hines, is to grind out the clock late in the game to ensure victory. Because let's not forget, NFL teams do not care about our fantasy teams, Show.
No, they absolutely do not. They 1,000% do not. We've learned that slam dunk fact as any. I honestly thought when you said what's one thing we learned about the Bills real football-wise, I honestly thought you were going to say nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. And I thought,
that is true. That is true.
You know, I want to get to one more thing with the Bills, and I mentioned him before, Gabriel Davis. Okay, so Gabe Davis finished the game with two catches for 15 yards and a touchdown. He had an 8-yard touchdown, I believe, right after Stephon Diggs. I think that was the next score in that game. It was the Gabe Davis TD. Isaiah McKenzie, 5 catches for 44 yards. We already mentioned Cook, and then after that, it was Hines. He had 1 catch for 21 yards, and then Gabe Davis for the 2 catches, 15 yards, and the TD. We kind of already knew that Gabe Davis was a boom or bust player, but kind of like kind of in the same way that Mike Williams is, but because he is a boomer bust player, and I know we always say, oh, you want to own pieces of the best offenses in the NFL. So that's definitely the case here. It applies to the Buffalo Bills, but I almost feel like going forward, unless you are facing a pass defense that is like 15th ranked or worse, right? Like essentially in the bottom half of the league, you know, I guess 16, 17 or, you know, thereabouts or worse, then you probably, I don't know, like I feel like it's more of a dart throw with Gabe Davis than you otherwise would have imagined, especially given his draft capital, because I'm sure some people drafted Gabe Davis to be their WR2. Some people, I'm sure, who are maybe a little luckier drafted him to be their WR3, so that maybe that works out for you a little better. But boy, I mean, I don't think there's a scenario in which I could confidently start Gabe Davis basically for the rest of the season, because it's so much of it is guesswork.
It really does feel like that. And when you look at how he started the year, you know, he had 4 catches, 88 yards and a touchdown against the Rams. And you're going, ah, yes, that's why I drafted Gabe Davis. And then he proceeded to have 37 yards and 13 yards the following 2 weeks before blowing up for 3 catches for 171 yards and 2 scores against the Steelers. Part of which was, you know, a boom or bust play. Like it was like, what, a 98 yard pass play that ended up in a touchdown. He does remind me of early career Mike Williams. He really does. He's got the big body. He can go up and get the ball. He's got good speed, but the consistency is not there. What we can say about Gabriel Davis is he's getting the targets. Like he had 7 targets this week. The week before the game against Detroit was a little bit disappointing considering the competition, but he still had 5 targets. The previous week, Cleveland 7, and then Minnesota 10. That was also a shootout game. He's basically a player that if you have a solid floor, you can probably start Gabe Davis in a flex spot because his floor is not great, but the ceiling is sky high. I think that's where you kind of go. As we approach the last 2 weeks of the year, I mean, well, next week, because he's already played this week. If you are in a position where you're looking at your chances of making the playoffs and say, it's between, you know, Gabe Davis and, I don't know, maybe it's Deontay Johnson, let's say. I would venture a guess that everyone believes that Gabe Davis's ceiling is much higher. So in that case, if you need a win, you're probably going to start Gabe Davis. But if you're a team that has a really low floor potential, you probably want something a little bit more solid in your flex spot. And I think that's how we have to approach Gabe Davis the rest of the way. When you look at the schedule, they have the Jets next week, and we know how good that Jets secondary is. So that's not a great start for Gabe Davis. I assume that Stephon Diggs is going to see a lot of Sauce Gardner, but Gabe Davis might see a bit of him as well. And then he finishes with the Dolphins, the Bears, and the Bengals in the playoffs. There's some good matchups in there. And you can probably exploit those, again, if you have a team that has a pretty solid floor. Other than that, I'm really skeptical about starting him. And I'm a big fan of his skill set, but it's just not translating right now.
Let's say Mike Williams doesn't play. He's already out for this week. He's not playing this week. So please, if you have Mike Williams in your lineup, bench him because he's not playing this week. But let's say next weekend, Mike Williams also does not play. Would you play Gabe Davis over either Joshua Palmer or DeAndre Carter? I think the Chargers play the Dolphins. That was the game that got flexed next weekend. That was the game that got flexed into Sunday Night Football, I think. Chargers-Dolphins got flexed over. I want to say it was Broncos-Chiefs. So if that was
thank God we don't have to watch the Broncos in prime time.
Yeah, I'm out. Someone in my main league finally dropped a 2 QB league. Finally dropped Russell Wilson. So I think that's indicative of how everyone feels about having to watch the Broncos. But where do you fall on that? Gabe Davis next week against the Jets, or DeAndre Carter or Joshua Palmer against the Dolphins?
Definitely not over Josh Palmer, especially the way he's been playing lately. Like that to me is a no-go. DeAndre Carter, on the other hand, is super interesting because he's a similar type of player in that super boom or bust and the floor can be really low. I mean, in terms of the matchup, you like playing against the Dolphins defense rather than the Jets defense. That's a tougher question than it would have been if you asked me 5 weeks ago.
I know, right?
That I will say. I think I still lean Gabe Davis because I know the target share is going to be there. But I'm not super confident that he's going to put up better numbers. So I think at that point, it becomes I still think I lean Davis, but I may be wrong on that one.
Hey, no, it's a tough one. If you want us to answer any other tough questions or help you kind of break a tie, let's say, you can always text us at 590-590, name and location on the People's text line. We are here for a full 2 hours today, so get your text line questions in again at 590-590, name and location. I see a whole ton here already, so we'll get to as many as possible in about 45 minutes from now, the top of the second hour. And, of course, any questions we don't answer on the air, we will answer all the questions you send in off the air before 1 p.m. Eastern when the rest of the Week 13 games go across the NFL. You're listening to The Fantasy Show, Show and Matt. Let's take a very, 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 very quick break. And when we come back, we will start our start sits. We'll begin with Steelers and Falcons, and then we'll get through the rest of the Week 13 start sits. And again, your questions on the People's Text line at the top of the second hour of the program. But start sits next on The Fantasy Show, Show and Matt on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese here, getting set for Week 13. Injury news notes, start sits for every single game. Of course, your questions on the People's Text line at 590-590. Name and location, please, as we get set for another exciting week of NFL football. Matt, there are a couple teams on buys this week. The Cards and the Panthers. So I imagine some people will be looking for fill-ins for perhaps DeAndre Hopkins, perhaps Kyler Murray, perhaps James Conner on the Panthers side of things. Probably not like a lot of guys, but maybe you had Deontay Foreman and he's become more reliable for you as of late. But if you're looking for some bye week fill-ins for those two teams, not a heavy bye week here in Week 13, but still you might need some replacements. But still next week, Week 14, boy, there are a lot of teams on buys. Like for a week that is leading into a lot of either like win and you're in or win and go home games next weekend. The Falcons, Bears, Packers, Colts, Saints, and Commanders all on bye next week. So for my league, that'll be the first week of the playoffs. For a lot of other leagues, it'll be the very last week of the regular season. So I wish you all the best when it comes to parsing through lineup decisions. And of course, you can text us at 590-590, name and location on the People's Text line. I see a whole ton of texts here, so we'll get to all of those in about 30 minutes. But let's start with our start sits. And Steelers, Falcons as well, we will begin. And let's get to the Steelers running backs, Matt, because it's been hard.
But we have to.
Yeah, we have to. unfortunately, yes. Najee Harris, I think, is going to play. Let's start with that. I believe he is actually going to suit up today. He had the oblique injury and knocked him out of the game at halftime last week. He had scored a touchdown prior to that, so at least it wasn't a complete disaster of a start for most people. But given how he was playing, I think he would have wanted a lot more. It does look like he is going to suit up today. But it's interesting because he's even when he does play a lot, he's not used as much as you would want a quote-unquote bell cow running back, especially because he was a bell cow last year. He's not used as much as you would like. Is there any value in starting either Jaylen Warren or Benny Snell? And keep in mind, both of those guys are also banged up as well.
Yeah, so it's funny. Najee Harris had back-to-back, did not practice, and then he has a limited practice, then he has a no-injury designation coming into this game. And Jaylen Warren has three full practices in a row and is questionable. So, yeah, that's kind of weird. But if I had to choose between those guys, like, I feel if Najee Harris starts, you probably have to play him. But I feel like I'm okay starting Jaylen Warren in this game as well. I'm less concerned about Benny Snell only because Benny Snell got the work that Jaylen Warren was going to get if he was active. That's how I kind of look at last week.
Okay.
And I do believe that Pittsburgh is going to even the workload out a little bit just because I think that Najee Harris is more banged up than they're leading on. Even before the injury last week, I still think that that Lisfranc injury that he suffered in the preseason has been lingering all year, which is why, you know, we've seen him struggle a bit. That and the combination of the offensive line not being very good. But in a week that you know, maybe you're trying to replace a Deonta Foreman or a James Conner. I think the floor is kind of low, but I do think that the ceiling is a mid-range ceiling for Jaylen Warren if he does play us, and more so in PPR leagues than in standard leagues.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I do think that's fair. We do know that Kenny Pickett does check it down a decent amount. I mean, like, it's crazy to think that he completed over 70% of his passes against the Colts. He went 20 of 28, and he also only threw for 174 yards and no touchdowns. So I don't know, like, the receivers weren't exactly doing him a lot of favors, but still, it's not, like, the greatest stat line. Speaking of those receivers, you look at guys like Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, Pat Freiermuth. I think you can probably start Pat Freiermuth against the Atlanta defense because they're not great against tight ends. They did just allow the Commanders to score with the tight end last week, so maybe a little bit of a glimmer of hope for a pass catcher not named George Pickens. But at this point, I feel like you're more confident with Pickens than you would be with Deontay Johnson, which is crazy considering Deontay was so heavily used in years past.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I feel like Deontay Johnson is kind of a middle floor flex starter in PPR. I don't think he's startable in standard. George Pickens is a wide receiver three with some upside in this game, particularly because if there was ever going to be a breakout game for Kenny Pickett, it has to be against Atlanta, doesn't it? Like, I mean, it has to be.
You'd hope so.
Just like we thought if Aaron Rodgers was going to have a breakout game, it was against Detroit, right? Wrong. So that's where I kind of lean here. I agree with the Freiermuth take. I like Pat Freiermuth. I believe that he's in that next tier of tight ends behind, you know, Andrews, Kelsey. I put Goddard in there as well. And to an extent, I put TJ Hockenson in that group, but TJ Hockenson's kind of closer to the edge of that. And so I think Pat Freiermuth is in that next group. The difference is that it's going to take Kenny Pickett to throw the ball a little bit more and a little bit more downfield than he has. But like I said, if there was ever a breakout game for Kenny Pickett, God, it has to come this week against the Falcons.
Speaking of those Falcons, probably not a lot of guys you are going to start really at all. I mean, no more Kyle Pitts. We knew that for a while, but they officially said he is done for the season. He's not going to play anymore. So you can say, unless you're like in a keeper league or something, you can safely drop Kyle Pitts to the waiver wire because he's not going to suit up again this season at all. So that basically leaves the usual suspects in terms of discussions about the Falcons. It leaves Marcus Mariota. It leaves Cordarrelle Patterson, Tyler Allgeier. It leaves Drake London. And I would think to a certain degree it leaves Olamide Zaccheaus. And whenever I say his name, I think of the character from the Planet of the Apes, like the Dr. Zaius, like Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius, you know, that song. But I beyond Patterson, they're probably all sits, honestly. Like, even Zaccheaus might be a start only in full PPR leagues. How's that? Like, maybe beyond that, in standard, maybe even half PPR, I don't know that I'm that confident in starting Zaccheaus. Like, it might literally be Patterson, and that's about it.
That's exactly what I have wrote. Cordarrelle Patterson is the only Falcon I'm comfortable starting in this game. Olamide Zaccheaus, like, you start him in, like, a full PPR 16-team league at this point. That's where I'm at with that.
Yeah.
This Falcons team with Marcus Mariota at the helm is just a disaster. The only reason why he's still starting is they're somehow in the playoff race at 5-7, which just tells you how horrible the NFC South has been. Like, Carolina's 4-6, I think, and they're in the mix, or 4-7, whatever they are. They're in the mix here. That's a joke. So, I mean, Marcus Mariota, he does offer you a bit of a rushing floor. Pittsburgh's defense is improved over the course of the year. They're not hemorrhaging points like they were early on in the season. They're not great, but I still like their front seven, which means that Marcus Mariota probably going to be running a bit for his life today. So I do think that there's a decent rushing floor there, but I can't trust him with his arm. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, unless you're Justin Fields or to an extent now Lamar Jackson, I don't want a quarterback that's got a rushing floor of 34 yards. Like, I need the guy to stand in the pocket and make plays. And he just doesn't do that for me. So he's a sit.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Speaking of Lamar Jackson, Broncos at Ravens is the next one here on our list. Why don't we start with the Ravens? Because honestly, I'm tired of talking about the Broncos. Well, we have to, unfortunately, but let's start with the
Ravens.
That'll
be a quick conversation.
Yeah, that's why. We'll leave it for the end because it's going to be super quick. But the Baltimore Ravens, Lamar Jackson, there was some intrigue with him this week because I think he had a hip pointer. Like he had a bit of a hip injury basically for much of the week. But the last time he practiced, I believe much like other players, he did practice without the injury designation. So it looks like he's going to be good to go. I know the Broncos defense is still pretty stout, all things considered, but still, I think you're like, who's benching Lamar Jackson? Unless you have like Jalen Hurts as your other QB, you're probably not benching Jackson. So Lamar is still QB1. Gus Edwards, basically after missing some time, he basically came back to the field last Sunday and immediately became the lead back again, right? Like I know that J.K. Dobbins might return the not-too-distant future, and then you really get into the weeds with these fantasy quagmires with all the various running backs involved. But it basically immediately demoted Kenyon Drake to maybe at best a flex play. And Gus Edwards, I'd probably say like a middling RB2 for me.
Yeah, I've got Gus Edwards as a bit of a back-end RB2, but TD upside because he's the guy who's going to get the goal line carries because they haven't really used Lamar in that role this season. I mean, not to the same degree. And they call him Gus Bus for a reason. Kenyon Drake for me is just a non-start here. He only had two carries last week. He had one catch. Actually, he had no catches. He had one target. It's just this looks like Gus Edwards' backfield until J.K. Dobbins comes back. And there's still a chance that J.K. Dobbins might not even be back next week. So I'm looking at least 15 carries for Gus Edwards. Like, let's not forget. And I'm not saying that Gus Edwards is Josh Jacobs because he's not. But Josh Jacobs just went off on the Broncos defense for over 300 total yards last week. I'm not saying that that's the Gus Edwards week, but this Broncos defense can be had. And partially because, let's face it, they're not playing for anything. This season's gone in the tank, much to the surprise of basically everyone. And not to say that they've given up, because I'll never say that a professional athlete has given up. But they look very disinterested right now. And I think that the Ravens, who are playing for top spot in the NFC North, I think they run all over the Broncos here because the Broncos pass defense is still very good. But I think that this game is won on the ground. And I think that both Lamar Jackson and Gus Edwards have big days on the ground.
Well, when your wide receivers are guys like DeMarcus Robinson and Devin Duvernay and so on, I don't think it's the most inspiring group. I don't think you want to start really any Bronco, or pardon me, Ravens pass catcher against the Broncos, unless his name is Mark Andrews. And even then, I would say with Andrews, maybe just temper expectations, because if we know that that Lamar Jackson likes to throw the ball to Mark Andrews, I promise you the Broncos defense knows that as well.
Yeah. Well, Mark Andrews, you know, when we talk about a guy that we expected to be, I think I had him as tight end one this season, especially after last year. I know he's been hurt. He missed two or three games, I believe. Mm-hmm. But his last three games, he has not eclipsed 64 yards. And that, to me, is a very big surprise, considering that in the first 5 weeks that Mark Andrews eclipsed 89 yards three times. And he had touchdowns in those games. And that's where, like, Mark Andrews has not scored a touchdown since October 23rd against Cleveland. And granted, he missed some time in there, but that's a four-game stretch where Mark Andrews has not scored a touchdown. I think he gets on the board this week. The Broncos linebackers are not as good as they used to be. I do think that Mark Andrews ends up having a better day. I would like to see the target share up as well. 5, 8, and 7 targets the last three games. I'd like to see Mark Andrews in double digits this week.
Let's get to the Broncos real quick. As I said, it'll be a quick conversation. I think everyone in this offense, because of the general struggles, Russell Wilson struggles, everyone struggles, really. It has just been not a pretty picture. I think that the main guys you can start are Latavius Murray, Cortland Sutton, and Greg Dulcich. And I suppose Jerry Jeudy as well, but he has been injured, and the injury bug has kind of been flying around the team to a certain degree, more for some guys than others. But still, even like for any of these guys, none of them are in the one category. And I would say only Dulcich is in the TE2 category, right? Like Latavius Murray, flex play for me. Jeudy, probably also flex play for me because he's not super healthy and because of the passing game. And even Cortland Sutton, who still has gotten, like, considering the struggles of this offense, he still gets around double-digit points most weeks. But still, you drafted him to be more than that. Even so, I guess WR3 category, but that's not super inspiring either way.
Yeah, the Jeudy thing is interesting just because I do believe he's going to be on a snap count. Like, there was talk that he wasn't going to play this week, and he grabbed like a limited practice on Friday just to put himself in line to play. And it does sound like he's going to go. At least we'll know early so you can set your lineups accordingly. Cortland Sutton's been really good in his absence, though. 5 catches or 66 yards in each of his last 3 games. And like you said, outside of that, it's Latavius Murray and nobody else. What it does feel like with this Broncos offense is it's only going to be one receiver that ends up having a good day, because before Jerry Jeudy went down, Cortland Sutton was not startable at all. This does muddy the waters a little bit, but I think you can ride Cortland Sutton for one more week, and then we'll see after that. It's probably Jerry Jeudy after that. And I just wanted to get this in there. Russell Wilson sucks.
Yeah, he's bad. He's been bad, right? Like, so bad to the point where the Geno Smith-led Seahawks, and we'll get to them in a little bit, but they've been so good. And then on top, like, they're in contention to win that division. On top of that, they're probably going to have, what, a top 5 draft pick because of the Broncos, or top 5 to 7 draft pick, probably? Like, it's kind of nuts, actually, like, when you think about who the Seahawks might be able to draft next season.
That's like the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
Who have the LA Rams first round pick, because the LA Rams don't believe in picking in the first round. They have their pick. The Rams are 3-8. And because of how bad the NFC is, the Detroit Lions still have an outside shot to get in. They can make the playoffs and still be picking in the top 5, much like the Seattle Seahawks. Man, that's bad management by the Broncos and the Rams, isn't it?
Well, I see in the Rams, at the very least, you can.
They got a Super Bowl.
Yeah, they won a Super Bowl. So I think, like, no matter what happened this year, you're kind of playing. I feel like I would think of it as playing with house money, right? Because you won the Super Bowl. That's the goal at the end of the year. They got it done. They did it. Matthew Stafford's the Super Bowl champion. Matthew Stafford's also on the IR now and is probably not going to play. Like, maybe he comes off the IR in like week 18 or something like that, right? But I think beyond that, the Rams are a complete mess. And I mean, and no more Cooper Kupp. I would be surprised if he played again this season. So yeah, I think that pick going to the Lions is going to be really interesting to see if they draft one of the top QBs and replace, maybe Jared Goff is the backup, maybe he gets traded and you have this young QB as the guy, you know, marshaling the troops for the Amon-Ra St. Browns of the world and so on. That's going to be a lot of fun to discuss, but I look forward to doing that with you throughout the offseason. I wanted to get to a couple more start sits before we take a quick break, Matt. Packers at Bears, and again, I think this is probably a relatively short conversation on the Packers' end because Aaron Rodgers is, I believe he is going to play despite suffering another injury, but I believe he is going to play against the franchise he has largely owned over the course of his entire career. But the big start for this one, probably beyond anyone else, and I don't think you need us to tell you this too much, but it is Aaron Jones, mainly because the Chicago Bears' run defense is absolutely abysmal, the 6th most rushing yards per game given up, about 143 yards per game on the ground. So Aaron Jones already being one of the better running backs in the NFL, you're definitely starting him. And Christian Watson, every week I think to myself, is he going to score another touchdown? Like, how sustainable is this? And he just keeps doing it. Again, I don't know if it's going to continue happening, but at the same time, he's probably the most reliable pass catcher on the Packers right now.
Yeah, that's the only wide receiver that I'm interested in starting. And let's not forget, Show, Aaron Rodgers does own the Bears. He owns the Chicago Bears. Last outing was probably one of his better outings of the year, 234 passing yards and 2 touchdowns. I know that doesn't sound like Aaron Rodgers' numbers, but I do anticipate that, you know, he is playing through a nasty rib injury, it sounds like, and it doesn't sound like he's going to sit at any point this season. So I feel like I'm comfortable riding Aaron Rodgers today. I do love Aaron Jones this week, and I do think they're going to mix more A.J. Dillon in. And like you mentioned, the Bears' run defense has just been horrible. I think that's where they really focus their energy in this one. So I'm comfortable starting A.J. Dillon in a flex. I'm comfortable Aaron Jones wherever you need to slot him in. And I really like Christian Watson in the wide receiver 2 category this week with obvious touchdown upside, because that's all the man does is catch touchdowns.
Yeah, over the past three games, I believe he has caught 12 passes for 265 yards and six touchdowns, which is pretty crazy, right? And then that's a stretch that also includes two receptions on three targets for 78 yards and a receiving touchdown in the fourth quarter alone from Jordan Love of all people. And then on top of that, against the Philadelphia Eagles of all teams, right? So the Eagles still won, the Packers still lost, and Aaron Rodgers is still starting games. So in the end, it didn't matter too much, but it did, I don't know, like a tantalizing glimpse of what the Packers offense might look like with Jordan Love as the QB. But again, that's probably not going to be happening in a consistent way anytime soon. Chicago Bears side of this matchup, Justin Fields, he missed last week with a sprained left shoulder, but he did get a limited practice in this week, a couple of limited practices. And Trevor Siemian, I think he's done for the season. I think Trevor Siemian is done with the oblique injury. So if there is any backup QB play, I guess it's going to be Nathan Peterman going forward. But Justin Fields, I believe, is going to start this weekend. So if he plays, and again, looks like he will, I think you do start Justin Fields just because of the rushing upside with his feet, even if he doesn't throw the ball a ton with that injured shoulder, because it's not like the injured shoulder just went away, right? He's probably still in some pain, but at this point of the year, probably a lot about pain management. David Montgomery, though, because of that, I would think he gets a teensy-weensy boost. I would say RB2 for me. And don't forget, the Green Bay Packers have allowed the fifth most fantasy points to running backs, which I think, just generally speaking, bodes well for David Montgomery.
Playoff Monty, man.
Yeah.
There's nothing like the full playoff Monty, because when Khalil Herbert went down, everybody went, oh boy, here we go again. You expect nothing from David Montgomery all season, and then he becomes the lead back and nobody else is touching the ball. I do think that that getting Justin Fields back actually helps David Montgomery, even though he was really good last week, despite having basically me or you throwing the ball for the Chicago Bears and Trevor Siemian and the backup is now Nathan Peterman, and that's horrible. But I'm starting Justin Fields if he's playing. There's no question about that. I am curious, though, how the target share works now. You know, Cole Kmet's there. I wonder how they work in Chase Claypool. He hasn't had a ton of time to work with Justin Fields, so I think it gets split. I think there's some Byron Pringle mixed in there. I think that there's some Equanimeous St. Brown mixed in there, and Chase Claypool's there. I'm not quite comfortable starting Chase Claypool at this point, so I'll just roll with Justin Fields and David Montgomery, who I do believe has some RB1 upside this week.
I think so. It's definitely possible. It's 1,000% possible, and like you said, when it comes to the stark differences in the two defenses for the Packers, right, the pass defense and the rush defense is terrible. The pass defense is the fourth best passing defense in the NFL. They allow only 187.8 passing yards per game, led by a guy we talk about a lot, Jaire Alexander. So I don't know who he's going to cover. It might be Cole Kmet. It might be Claypool. It might be St. Brown. It might be Dante Pettis, for all we know, but At the end of the day, I think generally speaking, especially with an injured quarterback, or if a surprise happens last minute and the backup quarterback goes for the Bears, I think generally speaking, you just want to stay away from most pass catchers in this one for the Chicago Bears. Generally speaking, now that Darnell Mooney is out for the season, Jags at Lions is our next start sit here, Matt. And for me, I started Travis Etienne last week. So let me just tell you, in that league, I did lose. After Travis Etienne had 0.3 points, it wasn't great seeing after the game that Doug Peterson was like, oh yeah, Etienne could have gone back in that game. Thanks a lot, Doug. Thanks a lot. No one had Jamichael Hasty last week, or no one started him at least. But it certainly looks like Travis Etienne is going to be... he's questionable and has been questionable all week. And despite that, the coaching staff for the Jaguars, Peterson and others, have said that he is going to play. Like they have said that he is likely active, or he is going to be active and likely going to get the bulk of the carries. So I guess you take coach speak with like a grain of salt, and doubly so after what we got after last week's game. But boy, you want Travis Etienne to start against the Detroit Lions, Matt. Let me tell you that.
It's been a rough couple of weeks for Travis Etienne, especially, I mean, rough by our fantasy standards, because he just blew up after James Robinson was traded. And now you're like, oh, he's not getting 150 total yards and a touchdown. What's he doing? If there was an opportunity for him to do that, it's absolutely this week against the Lions. I anticipate that we see a lot of Travis Etienne. I know it's been tough sledding for the Jags this year. It hasn't, you know, it's been okay, but it's certainly not great. But at the end of the day, he's their best playmaker, and they're going to give him the ball. I'm comfortable starting him. I'm comfortable starting Trevor Lawrence in this game as well. QB 10 over the last 4 weeks. I've got him as actually a mid-range QB 1 just because of going against the Lions defense. And for the pass catchers, Christian Kirk and Zay Jones, I think, are in really good spots here. The Lions tend to give up big days to at least one wide receiver. But in a game that I do believe is going to be high scoring, at least it should be because both defenses haven't been good, I think Zay Jones is a nice little flex start. And I think that Christian Kirk has a big week. I've got him as like a back end wide receiver 1.
Yeah, Kirk leads the team in basically every meaningful stat, right? Targets, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns. He is going to just destroy whatever his career bests are, and he has been fantastic so far this season. And yeah, Zay Jones, I know he had, I think he had like the chest injury, I think, was, which is not a super common one, but he had a chest injury for most of the week. But I still think if he does play, you can feel okay about starting him. I got him as a flex play, maybe with some higher upside just because of the injury. But if he was 100% healthy, yeah, he'd be like a WR, maybe middling to lower end WR2. But I agree with you on Trevor Lawrence. Against the Lions, Lions defense, still not great. I know they have some playmakers out there like Hutchinson and so on, but still, generally speaking, I think it's a defense that has been taking advantage of a lot this season. So I think you can feel good about starting a lot of the top names for the Detroit Lions. And for the Lions themselves, again, the Jags are not the best defense in the world, so I think you can feel okay starting Amon-Ra St. Brown, for example. But, you know, you look at Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift, and that's always the kind of the tricky part of the situation for the Detroit Lions, because you never really know who's going to be the guy getting the bulk of the carries. I mean, you kind of know that Jamal Williams gets the bulk of the carries, like, within the 5-yard lines. But beyond that, I don't know. I feel like maybe you might feel a little better about DeAndre Swift. I know he's apparent, again, coach speak, you gotta take it with a grain of salt, like always. Like I just said about Doug Peterson and the Jags, but DeAndre Swift, they've been talking about how he's never been healthier this season than he is this week. So, I mean, you take that for however you want, but maybe a flex play with some upside for more, and you hope that more is a lot more, given that you drafted DeAndre Swift as a probably an RB1 this year.
He's healthy, which means he's going to get 5 carries instead of 3.
I know, right?
That's what's going to happen with this ridiculousness that is the Detroit Lions backfield. At the end of the day, if they say he's healthy, you do have to start DeAndre Swift, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And the reason is we talked about it. The guy just puts points up every time he touches the ball, which is why I don't understand why they're not using him. It's not like Jamal Williams has been this efficiency monster. He has a bunch of touchdowns within the 3 or 4 or 5 yard line. Like, that's where the bulk of his points are coming from. DeAndre Swift's ability to catch the ball is something that sets him apart from Jamal Williams. So I do think that there is some value there in PPR leagues. I'm probably staying away from DeAndre Swift in standard leagues unless I'm really desperate and I'm looking for that high ceiling guy, because he can be that guy. But outside of that, I mean, it's just such a weird season in Detroit with the running backs. I had DeAndre Swift as a top 5 running back, I'm pretty sure. And based on his fantasy points per touch, he probably would have been there had he not got hurt, and then they just decided to not play him. So it's been a mess. The one guy that I'm really, really on this week is Jared Goff.
Okay.
And I know that's like, okay, why would you be on Jared Goff? Because whatever. Jared Goff, and this game is being played in Detroit. So in 5 road games, Jared Goff's completion percentage is really good, 65%. His passing yards per game is 227 per game. He has thrown 2 touchdowns to 4 interceptions in 5 road games. His home numbers are gross. Completion percentage a little bit down, 62.38%, but he's thrown 15 touchdowns to 3 interceptions in 6 games at home this year, and he is throwing for 257.8 yards per game at home. If there has ever been a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, it is this season's Jared Goff home and road splits. I'm really on Jared Goff this week, and I love, love, love that we get to see Jameson Williams this week.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. You got activated. I did forget about that, actually. You get to see the top, for a lot of people, the top wide receiver talent-wise in this past year's draft, which is pretty remarkable considering we've seen a lot of very talented rookie wide receivers this year. I am very much looking forward to seeing what Jameson Williams has, but I am also very cognizant of the fact that they might ease him in, considering they want him to be playing football for them for a very long time. So I for fantasy wise, especially if you stashed him on your injured reserve spot for basically the entire season, I would say maybe approach with caution, temper expectations, like we always say, because you never really know how the coaching staff treats guys coming off of serious injuries. And it might be like a 2023 situation for Jameson Williams in terms of being super fantasy relevant, but hey, I mean, you held him all year for a reason. So let's watch that situation and see how it develops. Let's get to Browns at Texans as well. And Deshaun Watson going to be starting at QB this week. So no more Jacoby Brissett. He goes back to being a backup. I think he did a fantastic job this season, all things considered, considering his skill set and the way that the team utilized the Browns offense before Watson took the field for a very first time, which he is going to do against his former team later this afternoon. I think I said this to you about the QB change for the Jets when they went from Joe Flacco to Zach Wilson, which is that you never know really how the team is going to utilize really any player when they have a QB change. And for me, the only constant on the Cleveland Browns, as it probably should be, is Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb is one of the best running backs in the NFL. We all know that. You're starting him every single week. We all know that. He's an RB1. There's not a lot of discussions there. But beyond Nick Chubb, Watson himself, Kareem Hunt, Amari Cooper, Donovan Peoples-Jones, all of those guys are definitely guys you can, in theory, start. But I'm just going to say, I personally, apart from maybe Amari Cooper, I'm probably benching everyone until I see what it looks like for real this week.
Yeah, and I honestly don't know if we're going to be able to get a really good grasp of what this looks like, because let's face it, Deshaun Watson has barely played football over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that we don't talk about. And in the game that he played in the preseason, he looked horrible. And I know it's preseason, and I know it's vanilla, and I know they're working through some things, but he hasn't played in a meaningful game in almost 2 years. And that, to me, is a reason why I would be very hesitant. Like, I have to start him in two QB leagues because I really didn't think he was going to get suspended because the NFL is a joke. So he's one of my quarterbacks in a Superflex league, so I will start him. But it's against the Texans defense, who is horrible against the run, but they're really good against the pass.
So yeah, shockingly.
Yeah, and I'm not like, I'm starting Amari Cooper. I'm really hesitant to start Donovan Peoples-Jones, even though I really do like him. He's probably like a high ceiling, low floor flex play. And the Texans are gonna want blood this week. This is the first game back for Deshaun Watson. The NFL says they wanted this. They're not stupid. Nobody's watching a Browns-Texans game at this point in the season, and everybody knew it, unless it was Deshaun Watson returning against his former team for his first game back from suspension. Way to go, Roger Goodell. Don't tell me that you don't like Narrative Street. I don't know what we're going to learn from the Cleveland Browns offense with Deshaun Watson. I'm really not sure. So I'd be really hesitant to start him. Like, if I had to choose between Deshaun Watson and Aaron Rodgers this week, for example,
right,
I'm probably starting Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's totally fair because, again, like you said, we haven't seen Watson play professional football in a meaningful regular season game for almost two full years, two full calendar years, which is a long time in the NFL, right? It's a very long time. And I mean, he's a talented player, but at the same time, I'm not sure how much that's going to translate to fantasy results immediately. So I would look for Browns players. I would just temper expectations, even for Amari Cooper, who has been having a fantastic year. I would say just, again, temper your expectations for what he does. And on the Texans side of things, it's probably a pretty short conversation, right? I mean, like, no Brandon Cooks. I should say that he is out. He has been ruled as out for this week. So if you're not starting, if you have Brandon Cooks in your lineup, get him out of there because he's not going to play football this week, which basically means beyond Damian Pierce, there probably is nobody else you feel comfortable starting. Like, maybe Nico Collins, maybe if you're like in a 14 or a 16 team league, or like maybe Chris Moore, I suppose. Like, those guys have had some flashes this season, so I guess it's possible. But I mean, generally speaking, Kyle Allen has not looked good. The Browns, I mean, the Browns are not the best defense in the world, so you probably can expect some points from some of these guys, but it's probably, like, realistically, Matt, it's probably Damian Pierce and no one else.
Yeah, you're probably right. Like, I mean, Nico Collins is maybe a high ceiling, really low floor flex play, and not even that high of a ceiling, because let's face it, Kyle Allen's not very good. There's a reason why he's a backup quarterback, and we've seen how bad backup quarterbacks are in the NFL. See Trevor Siemian, see Nathan Peterman, see basically everybody outside of a select few. I think that Nico Collins is like a 7 or 8 point guy in half PPR formats this week. And if you're comfortable starting that because you've got a pretty high floor for the rest of your lineup, then go for it. But I've really tempered my expectations. Damian Pierce is the only guy that I'm really comfortable starting. And even that, he hasn't been great the last couple of weeks. He is going up against the Browns defense, who I believe has given up the second most rushing touchdowns. So I think there is a score in the future for Damian Pierce. But outside of that, no, this game is not going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, Damian Pierce, like you said, has not been great over the past couple of weeks. I think largely because the Texans have just gotten down essentially right away, and they've been forced to abandon the run. And he's like salvaged, again, salvaged being a strong word, because he's just like just scratching and clawing out like 5 points in half PPR leagues, especially last week when the Dolphins just completely destroyed the Texans. So you hope for a better result for the Texans, just generally speaking today, because if they can keep it close, you know Damian Pierce is getting the bulk of the work, right? So he has been so talented all season long, and then it's been coming, kind of crashing to a halt because everyone knows that the only option on the Texans offense is Pierce. So we'll see how he goes today. I got him as a middling RB2 just because he is very, very talented. But at the same time, I think much like the Broncos, we talked about that earlier, I believe the Browns do know that Damian Pierce is a talented player. Okay, let's take a very quick break, Matt. When we come back, we will get to the People's Text Line, 590-590, name and location, please. We will answer all of your fantasy questions, and any questions we don't answer on the air, we will get to off the air before the 1 p.m. Eastern kickoffs go later this afternoon. But the People's Text Line is next on the Fantasy Show, Show and Matt, on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Show Ali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese with you. We get set for week 13 across the NFL. Injury news and notes, start sits for every single game. And of course, your questions on the People's Text Line, 590-590, name and location, please. Mr. Marchese, are you ready to do some texts? You know what? I'll take that as a yes again.
And now, your fantasy questions on the People's Text Line.
2 weeks in a row. What's going on?
I can't take fault for this.
What's going on, Marchese?
I can't take fault for this.
Okay. We'll let that one slide then.
I know my connection's better this week than it was in Sudbury last week.
Did you guys win, by the way? What happened in Sudbury?
No, it was a nightmare. Was
okay.
Coach got suspended. Player got suspended.
Jeez.
Now I'm like the interim head coach.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Are you going to bite
kidding
some,
me?
Are you going to bite some kneecaps or what?
That would be the least that this team needs to do at this point, Joe.
Okay, let's get to some texts. 590-590 again. You guys know the drill. Name and location. Juan from Richmond Hill. We'll start with Juan. Half point PPR. Mixon is questionable. Would you play Jeff Wilson Jr. or Rashad White if he does not play? So that's a half point PPR league. That's a good question, because Raheem Mostert does look like he's going to play. And then on top of that, the San Francisco defense is a pretty good one. And Rashad White, I want to say Leonard Fournette is going to be mixed back in this week, I believe.
Yeah, that's how I'm looking at it as well. So Mostert's back. Jeff Wilson that was a weird kind of dynamic. Like, 1 week, yes, he was great. And then Jeff Wilson got banged up last week when Mostert was out, when we thought this was going to be the one. I do not think that Joe Mixon is playing in this game. I really don't. And here's where I'll lean with this one. Rashad White, it's for the answer for me, because he does play in the Monday Nighter. So you have time, because Chiefs and Bengals, if I'm not mistaken, is a late one. It's a 4 o'clock start, or 4:25,
right,
or whatever it is. So I would go with Rashad White, because I do believe that they're going to split series between White and Fournette. But late in the game, I do think that it's going to be Rashad's ball to carry. So if Mixon is in fact out, I lean with Rashad White.
Okay, I like that one. And yeah, you're right. The scheduling stuff always, gosh, always throws a wrench into things, right? Because I believe the Dolphins, thankfully the Dolphins 49ers is also a late game, but it's not one of the games that starts at exactly the same time as Chiefs Bengals. You know, sometimes they have those 4 o'clock games, like 4 o'clock Eastern games rather, that started 4:05, and then they have a couple ones that start at 4:25. So that might screw you by about 20 minutes in this case. And Jeff Wilson Jr. plays at 4:00, 4:05 p.m. And Joe Mixon, if he does play, plays at 4:25 Eastern. But like you said, at the very least, the Bucs don't play until Monday night. So we'll go with White over Jeff Wilson Jr. in that specific case for Juan from Richmond Hill. Robert in Kelowna getting up early for us here with a question, a QB dilemma. Do I start Tua versus San Francisco or Lamar Jackson versus Denver? That's a great question, because Tua has been so good this season. Like there's probably, if you're having the MVP conversation, like in real football, man, I dare say that Tua at the very least is in the conversation. Like he's been playing very, very, very well. But having said that, the San Francisco defense is also very good. And I believe today the Miami Dolphins will be without both of their starting tackles. So, I mean, as much as you feel good about starting all the offensive weapons, I do kind of wonder about Tua. I might lean Lamar by the slimmest of margins. Where are you at on this one?
This is a tough one, because I do think that Lamar ends up having a really good day, especially on the ground. But Tua's been way more consistent than Lamar has, especially with his arm. And that, for me, I know Teron Armstead is out, and Jackson is out as well, I believe. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, the two starting tackles. I think I still lean Tua here. I look at the weapons. I look at what the offense has done. And I know it's not going to be an easy day against the Niners defense. But I still think that Tua's in like the 260 passing yard, 2-3 touchdown day. And I'm not sure that Lamar's going to be able to do that with his arm. I agree with you. I think it's pretty close. But I just lean Tua just because of his arm.
Okay, so Matt goes Tua. I go Lamar for this one. Ben in Thornhill. Get that one here. Here we go. Ben in Thornhill, full PPR. And he has a couple of questions. He has one. I have Zeke Pollard and Brian Robinson. Do I stack the Cowboys, Zeke and Pollard, or do I bench one of them for Brian Robinson? It's important to remember, too, that this week, Antonio Gibson kind of cropped up on the injury report with, I believe, a foot injury. So I guess there's a chance he doesn't play. I believe he is questionable. So if he doesn't play, boy, Brian Robinson becomes a smash start, if only because he's going to get the bulk of the carries, right? He's going to get almost all of the work against the Giants' rush defense. That's just okay. It's not terrible, and it's not particularly great either. So if that's the case, I think you do start Brian Robinson. But at the same time, Zeke and Pollard have both been so good that it's not a terrible question, or not a terrible decision maybe to start both of those guys.
Yeah, and I'm looking. It does look like Antonio Gibson is gonna give it a go in this one. So with that being said, I mean, it to me, Brian Robinson, even with Antonio Gibson in the lineup last week, had a great week. He got the majority of the carries, but I look at Indianapolis, they're middle of the pack against opposing running backs in terms of fantasy points per game, and I find it really hard to sit guys that I know that are going to get at least 15 touches. And whereas Brian Robinson, I think he's going to get it, but I don't know that he's going to get it. And how do you pick between Zeke and Pollard at this point when they're both in the lineup? Yeah. You know what? I just start both of them. And I'll leave Brian Robinson on the bench.
Yeah, again, if Gibson were to somehow not go, and at the very least, this goes back to the schedule thing we were talking about, the Commanders and Giants play in the early games. So I think you'll know if Gibson is playing very early on. And even if he does play, maybe he's banged up. Yeah, but having said that, I think you're right. I think generally speaking, you probably should go with the better offense and the better players. And in this particular case, even with the last couple of years for Zeke, he's been pretty good as of late. So I think I would probably lean both Cowboys as well. Ben's other question as well is a QB question. Trevor Lawrence or Aaron Rodgers? Thank you for that one, Ben, because that's a tough one. Is it crazy to say Trevor Lawrence because of the matchup against the Lions? I mean, the Packers play the Bears, who are also not great. So it's probably like six of one and half a dozen of the other. But I'm curious where you fall on that, man.
I think it's Trevor Lawrence by more than a hair. I think it's Trevor Lawrence by a pretty fair margin, matchup based. And Trevor Lawrence has been good. QB10 over the last 4 weeks. I believe he is a top 12 quarterback over the course of the season. He is every week startable right now, and he's looked good of late. I'll go with Trevor Lawrence.
Do you believe in the idea of like players turning the corner, quote unquote, in one game? Like, I know people, I'm not saying that Trevor Lawrence is going to be good after just one game, but I feel like there's been some close calls all season long. After a really hot start, he cooled off, threw those two picks overseas, wasn't great for a lot of times, and then played really well in the second half against the Ravens to the point where they gutted out a win over the heavily favored Baltimore Ravens. Probably cost some people their survivor pools or some parlays or what have you. But do you believe in that idea of like players turning the corner and using that to get better over the season? I can never tell if that's like a sports cliche or not.
I mean, I think it's a bit of a cliche, but I do think that at the end of the day, show, this is just in life in general. Here's some wisdom for y'all out there.
Okay.
You win, you learn more from losing than you do from winning. And the Jaguars have lost a lot with Trevor Lawrence. And I do believe that he learned a lot about himself and a little bit about his team in that loss to the Broncos in England. And I also think that he realized that he can go toe-to-toe with a guy like Lamar Jackson in a game that, you know, mattered for the Ravens, a little bit less so for the Jags because the season's kind of gone off the rails. But I do believe that there is some truth to that, at least. Maybe not on a macro scale, but on a micro scale, I do believe that there is some truth to that.
I think so, too. Like I do get behind it to a certain degree, but hey, maybe the Trevor Lawrence can take some of that and put it into our fantasy points this week for the Jaguars offense against the Lions. Let's go to a couple more questions here. This one's from Eddie and Angus. Good morning, guys. Just one question today. If Mixon is out, who should I start in a half PPR, Gus Edwards or Peoples Jones? I think we probably kind of sort of answered this when we were talking about the Browns earlier this morning. But I mean, if Mixon is out, I think the answer has got to be Gus Edwards, if only because that you kind of know to a certain degree, even with all of the running guys there. And I say running guys, not running backs, because so many people, not running backs, run that ball there in the Baltimore offense. But still, Gus Edwards has got to be the guy because you know he gets a lot of touches versus Peoples-Jones, who, I mean, look, he could get a lot of touches. It's very possible, but I'm just not comfortable being like, yes, start DPJ in a week where they make a huge quarterback change to a guy who hasn't played football in over 2 years.
Yeah, it's Gus Edwards for me. I think Gus Edwards is in the 15 to 18 touch range this week. I'll roll Gus Edwards all day. And I like Donovan Peoples-Jones, but it's Gus the bus for me.
Yeah, that's a thing, right? Yeah, the Gus the bus has been refueled, I think, for this week versus we want to see one more week of what Donovan Peoples-Jones and the entire Browns offense, not named Nick Chubb, looks like. I mean, look, worst case scenario for the Browns offense, Matt, is that maybe they don't run the ball with Chubb at all, and then you're really in a huge quagmire. I really hope that's not the case because he has been so, so, so good. But I really hope we're not talking about like another, like a timeshare split between him and Hunt, or they don't run the ball with him. They're trying to pass. I don't know. I'm really hoping we just get away from that. And that's the one constant. But again, you just never really know. Let's go to a couple more here. John and Barry. I love the show, guys. Thanks for tuning in, John. A couple of questions. Michael Pittman Jr. or Joshua Palmer. And then he also says Isaiah Pacheco or Jamal Williams. Hopefully neither if Josh Jacob plays. But let's get to Pittman or Palmer this week. Full disclosure, I am starting both of them in one league. But that's a tough one because the Colts have been such a mess, Matt. But at the same time, Michael Pittman still gets such a large percentage of that target share. It is hard to bench him sometimes.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, the Chargers, there's no Mike Williams. They're playing the Raiders. The Raiders are horrible. Their defense sucks. And the Colts are going up against the Cowboys, who they've given up some points over the course of this season. I can't believe that I'm saying this, because if you had asked me this question in week one, I would have laughed at you. But I think it's Josh Palmer. Like, roll with the Canadian this week.
Oh, there you go. Canadian Josh Palmer, Brampton zone Josh Palmer going over Michael Pittman. And again, we'll see who Pittman sees coverage-wise for the Cowboys. I know Diggs was questionable going into, Trevon Diggs was questionable going into a lot of the practices this weekend. But even if he does play, I don't think he'll see exclusively Michael Pittman, right? They kind of rotate the coverage with those guys. He's not exactly like a follow you around the field type of cornerback. So it's not a terrible play either way, but yeah, probably Palmer with the better matchup for the Raiders versus the Cowboys. And then his other question, John, was hopefully neither of Josh Jacobs plays, but Isaiah Pacheco or Jamal Williams. That's a tough one because they're kind of in that same tier for me.
Yeah, they really are. And I think that Jamal Williams has the higher touchdown upside this week against the Jags. But Isaiah Pacheco has been really good. The Bengals run defense is decent. I think I still got to lean Jamal Williams because you know what's going to happen. You sit him, he's going to score two or three touchdowns.
Yeah,
that's just Murphy's law at this point.
Yeah,
so I'll lean Jamal Williams. But yeah, if Josh Jacobs is playing, then I'm going with Josh Jacobs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how could you not, right? I know he had the injury, but I mean, he's played through some injuries basically all season long. So, if he plays, you got to play him. You know what? Let's squeeze one more in. Steve from East York, just a QB question. Do I go Tua or Fields? Have a great fantasy Sunday, gentlemen. You too, Steve. But yeah, Tua or Fields for
man.
You.
Man.
That's a tough
one. Okay, so Jalen Hurts ran for, I think, over 120 yards the last time that the Packers played. It was against the Eagles. Mm-hmm. And how do you sit Justin Fields in any game at this point? And I know Tua has been great. How do you sit Justin Fields when there is, you know, and this isn't hyperbolic, there is a chance for a 100-yard rushing game from a quarterback and a guy who runs in touchdowns and he throws for them as well. I think I'm going to lean Justin Fields.
Okay, cool. I might lean Tua in this one just because I just think that the team is a better team, the Dolphins, by far than the Bears are. And I mean, I know that's not necessarily the be-all, end-all when it comes to fantasy football because, as we all know, you can get a lot of very good players for bad teams, or a lot of good fantasy players, I should say, for bad teams. But just because of the injury, I'm going to go with Tua this week, but it's close, though. It's close because if he's healthy enough to play, he's probably healthy enough to score fantasy points. Hey, that does it for our text line questions here in week 13. But if we have some time at the end of the show, we'll maybe squeeze a couple more in. But fear not, if we didn't get to your question on the air after the show, I'll hop on a phone call with Matt and we will answer all of your questions before 1 p.m. Eastern. Let's continue our start sits, Matt, and let's get to the Jets at Vikings and Mike White getting the start again this week after a very successful outing last weekend. A more difficult matchup for him in the Vikings than the Bears were last week, but still probably a QB2 for me. I know Michael Carter has been basically questionable, if not doubtful, all week with the ankle injury, and I don't believe he's going to play this week. So that basically means Zonovan Knight is going to get the large majority of the touches, although I imagine large majority still means like a bit of a quagmire with the backfield being a committee. Garrett Wilson, though, is the interesting one for me because he legitimately is a star. He just needs someone to get him the ball. And Mike White got him the ball twice in the end zone last week. So maybe that continues today. I have him as a kind of like a middling to high end WR2, just because you never really know what you're going to get from Mike White.
Yeah, I have him actually a little bit lower, but I do think the upside's there. I have him as a high-end wide receiver three with wide receiver two upside, just because, like you said, I just don't know what Mike White we're going to get. The guy I actually really like this week, because it feels like last week was like his Undertaker comes out of the coffin moment, and that was Elijah Moore. I like him as a flex start. I think they're going to work him into this offense. I think Mike White has a good rapport with him. We saw what Elijah Moore did at the end of last season. If Garrett Wilson and Elijah Moore can play at the same level as we've seen at the peak of their powers, dare I say this as a Bills fan, but the Jets are going to be a real, real tough out for anybody. And that includes this week in Minnesota I like Elijah Moore as a flex play this week. Zonovan Knight looked great last week, but I do think that Ty Johnson's going to have a role. They both kind of have like some flex appeal there. But what the heck's going to happen with James Robinson? Like, I think he's going to be an inactive. It's going to be the week that James Robinson, you don't expect anything from him. He's going to have a good day. So I'm really, really worried about both of Johnson and Knight as flex plays, but I think that's kind of where I slot them in.
Yeah, I'm just staying away from that whole backfield is my answer to you. Until Breece Hall comes back next season, and probably like middle of next season, and probably not even by the beginning of next season. Like, you never really know. But I'm staying away from Breece Hall. From the entire Jets backfield. On the Viking side of things, Kirk Cousins, Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, T.J. Hockenson are probably the guys you're going to start every week, no matter what the defense is. I would just say that given how good the Jets defense has been basically all season, man, in my opinion, even though they are QB1s, RB1s, WR1s, at the same time, and I think Justin Jefferson, even with Sauce, going to see a lot of Sauce Gardner, I would still say you're starting him as a WR. You're expecting a WR1 finish from him, I should say, because you're obviously starting him every single week. I would just maybe not expect the highest point production from every single one of these guys, especially if you're one of those people who like to stack players. Like, you might still get a very good Justin Jefferson start. You might just not also get a good start from literally every Vikings player, because the Jets defense is like, it's pretty decent, all things considered.
Yeah, I think the Jets defense is really good. The way I kind of look at it here is, yeah, Justin Jefferson is going to see a lot of Sauce Gardner. I think that Adam Thielen is probably a flex play. Maybe a lower end wide receiver 3. I'm still going to start TJ Hawk. Like you said, just temper your expectations, because this one could be a little bit lower scoring, but I think Thielen is the most interesting guy here. He's probably the most interesting guy every single week as it pertains to the Minnesota Vikings, because there are weeks where he gets into the end zone and he ends up having a good day. And there are weeks where he has 3 catches for 30 yards and you say, what the heck happened? So I'm interested if Justin Jefferson sees a lot of Sauce Gardner, that'll be a really fun matchup, but I think that elevates Adam Thielen a little bit as well.
Yeah, he did catch 9 of 10 passes for 61 yards and a touchdown against the Patriots, and it was basically his first big week since week 6, and that was against the Miami Dolphins. So he's still talented, maybe a little long in the tooth at this point in his career, but I think he's still talented enough that, yeah, I'm with you on the flex play. Commanders at Giants is our next game here, and again, we talked about this with Brian Robinson Jr. I'm probably sitting Antonio Gibson, if only because I think the Giants' defense is better than most people realize. It's worse against the run than it is against the pass. The pass defense is a little more stingy than the rush defense is. Having said that, I think Brian Robinson, probably like a mid-tier RB2 for me, with some potential for at least a touchdown at the very least, because we know they like to give him the ball a lot. And again, Antonio Gibson, even if he does or does not play, I mean, if he doesn't play, obviously he's a sit, but even if he does play, I think he's a sit for me just because of that injury, that the foot injury that cropped up this week. Terry McLaurin, what do you think? Like, you never really know what you're going to get from Terry just because of the usage for him, because again, very talented receiver. I'm thinking still probably a WR3, but I'm curious where you lean on him.
I think he's a WR2 as long as Taylor Heineke's the quarterback. Just because he looks his way a lot. The guy that I'm just to stay away from at this point, just because he's been, you know, after the first basically 4 weeks of the season, he's been as volatile as it gets, and that's Curtis Samuel. Like, I believe at one point last week, Curtis Samuel had 4 carries and didn't even have a target. He's, by the way, for those out there playing the home game, he's a wide receiver. So that, to me, is just a very, very messy situation. And then I think we're going to see an increase in Jahan Dotson's role. You know, he's working his way back from injury and he's been quiet the last few weeks, but he's a guy that they took in the first round and they have high expectations for. So I do believe that that is part of the conversation. After that, I mean, I'm probably not starting Taylor Heineke. I agree with you on the running backs. Giants are giving up the 13th most points per game against opposing running backs. And the one thing that you pointed out, and I like that you pointed it out, Antonio Gibson's injury is a foot injury, and God knows we don't love foot injuries with any football player, let alone a running back. He's a stay away from me as well.
Yeah, again, it's not a drop at this point, because I think when he is healthy, it's not a bell cow role for either guy. They just seem to like to use both of them, especially with no J.D. McKissic. They don't want to run one guy into the ground. So I do think that when healthy, Antonio Gibson is definitely a flex play, but this week, yeah, I'm just staying away from that if possible. On the Giants side of things, again, a pretty short conversation. Barkley and Slayton, you can probably start in different capacities every week. Like, I would say Saquon Barkley is definitely like a lower tier RB1 for me, just because sometimes the volume isn't always there. If the Giants are way behind, they have to throw the ball a ton and he doesn't get as much run as you would imagine. But Barkley is still, I still think, an RB1. And I mean, he's probably going to be a first round pick or a early second round pick next season. But Darius Slayton, so here's the thing. I do think he is at least an every week flex play because he is the de facto WR1 in New York. But I do think this week he had been dealing with some kind of non-COVID illness. I think he is playing today, but he had some kind, I don't know if it was the flu or he had a cold or he had some kind of stomach bug or something, but he did have some kind of non-COVID illness. So I believe he is playing, but it's just, you know, when people miss time like that, I just generally kind of raise an eyebrow and maybe, if possible, put him on the bench for other players. Like if your decision-making process is between Slayton and Palmer, or Slayton and Garrett Wilson, or Slayton, I was going to say Brandon Cooks, actually, but Cooks is out this weekend. But guys like that is probably the tier that you're considering benching him for other guys in.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm still going to start him just because Washington's offense has been a little bit better under Taylor Heinicke. I think they'll be able to put up points. So I do think that there is a role here for Darius Slayton. I do agree that the illness does kind of look like a stay away. And the only reason why it's not for me is that even a sick Darius Slayton is better than Kenny Golladay and Richie James and whoever else they want to throw out there to catch the ball. David Sills, keep going down the list of wide receivers that aren't very good. I'll take my chances with Darius Slayton this week. The Commanders against wide receivers have not been great this year, so I think that trend will continue.
Let's quickly get through a couple of these next couple of games here. Titans-Eagles, probably a relatively short conversation because I think you know who you're starting on both teams basically every week. I mean, you're obviously starting Derrick Henry, not much to say on him. But Treylon Burks, maybe a flex play because he's heating up, he's healthy, he's getting more run in the passing game. I mean, only over the past 3 weeks, only three Titans have gotten any targets at all. Burks, Robert Woods, and Westbrook Ekine, right? So he's obviously Treylon Burks is the heir apparent to A.J. Brown, who they'll be seeing today. He's a first-round pick. He's been great so far. So, I mean, he's been great in the last couple of weeks, I should say, and I imagine that usage would continue. But beyond Burks and Henry, I don't think you're really feeling too good about starting any of the other Titans. And on the other side of things, Jalen Hurts, Miles Sanders, Brown, like we mentioned, those are the guys you're starting every week anyways. You don't need us to tell you that. It's really just the other guys. I know Devontae Smith has gotten off the injury report this week, and Quez Watkins has become a popular pickup, if only because he seems to have occupied that Dallas Goedert role to a certain degree, not in the same way, obviously. But still, I think beyond the three usual suspects, you're probably not starting. Like in two, unless you're like really in bye week trouble and there are only two teams on bye this week, probably not starting too many guys other than the usual suspects for either team this week.
The only guy that I'm actually really skeptical about this week is Miles Sanders. And the Titans, they're 29th in points per game to opposing running backs. And unless this game gets out of hand, I don't see Miles Sanders reaching any sort of projection that's out there for him. So I'll go with the pass catchers. I'll go with A.J. Brown. I'll go with Devontae Smith. And I'm fine with Quez Watkins. He's had 3 weeks where he's had either 80 yards or a touchdown. And if you're really hurting for wide receiver help or flex help, I do think that there is a ceiling there for Quez Watkins, a guy who can stretch out the field and catch touchdowns.
Let's just squeeze in one more before we take a break, Matt. Seahawks at Rams. Let me ask you this. Are you starting any Los Angeles Rams this week?
There's only one that I would consider, and that's Kyren Williams.
Right.
Just because the Rams they're broken, their season's over, it should be a mess. But I do think that the Rams want to see what they have in Kyren Williams because I think they're done with Cam Akers. They obviously traded away Daryl Henderson. They just drafted Kyren Williams. He is a rookie. I think they want to see what he has. Last week, I believe he had 14 touches. I think he had 11 carries and 3 catches or 11 carries and 4 catches, something like that. He's an adept pass catcher. We've talked about that. He's very good in pass protection. We've talked about that. I think that they're going to give him a run here. At worst, he's a volume-based flex play with, you know, if you can get any guy in your lineup, generally speaking, that's going to get between 14 and 17 touches, I think you're fine with that. And I kind of think that's where he's at this week. So he's the only guy that I'm starting. And even that, it's a little bit of a low ceiling, low ceiling, kind of low floor play, but he's going to get volume. So that means something.
Yeah, it usually does, right? The volume definitely helps. It's worth noting that since he was activated in week 10, the snap share has gone from 27% in week 10 to 55% in week 11. And then last week, week 12, 70%. And of course, we've seen Darrell Henderson get cut. We've seen Cam Akers have an illness and not see the field a lot. So, I mean, Cam Akers did return to practice at one point this week. So, you know, he's probably going to be active today. But at the same time, I do agree. Kyren Williams is a guy who probably is the only Ram to start this week. And of course, on the Seahawks side of things, beyond the usual suspects, you're starting Ken Walker. You're probably starting Kenneth Walker every single week because he has been so, so good, and he doesn't have a lot of competition for touches. So clearly, and he's one of my favorite keeper picks too. I mean, a lot of people probably got him at the very end of your draft, if not off of waivers at the beginning of the season when people were making like roster crunch decisions. So Ken Walker, RB2, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, WR2, and Geno Smith, QB2. That seems about right for the Seahawks this year.
Yeah, I would say Geno Smith, even like a lower end QB1, just because the Rams are not playing for anything. It's kind of like the Broncos. They came in with expectation. They got hit by the injury bug. They didn't play well when their starters were healthy, and now they have nobody left. It does really feel like the Denver situation. I like Geno Smith in this one as a lower end QB1. I also think that Kenneth Walker is just going to have a monster day today. He's getting into the end zone again. I think you can take that one to the bank.
I like it. Yeah. Hey, are you sprinkling any dollars on that one or no?
Show. Come on. Of course I am. What would a Sunday be without me losing money?
Exactly. I like it. Hey, we're going to step aside, take a very quick break, and we're going to come back and wrap up our start sits. If we have some time, we'll get to a couple more of these text line questions as well. And of course, coming up after us, you can find out how to not lose money with Inside the Lines as well. But straight ahead, more start sits on the Fantasy Show, Show and Matt, on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Segment to go on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese with you for a couple more start sits ahead of week 13 in the NFL. Still some time to get us your fantasy questions on the People's Text Line, 590-590. Name and location, please, is where you can send those questions to. If we don't get to any questions here in the next, let's say, like 20 minutes or so, we will get to all of your questions before 1 p.m. goes here on the East Coast. We'll get to all of your questions before 1 p.m. where all the other Week 13 games get going. But, Matt, let's get to the last couple of our start sits. Dolphins at 49ers is our next one here. And we've answered a lot of Tua questions today, a lot of Tua questions. I would still say he is a middle to low-end QB1. It's weird, right? Because Tua is one of those players that I think could rush the ball with his own feet if he really wanted to. He doesn't. Like, not really, not to the same degree that, like, a Jalen Hurts does. I mean, not a lot of people do it like Jalen Hurts does it. But at the same time, he is playing so well with the arm that he doesn't really need to. So QB1 for Tua for me. And obviously Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle are WR1s because they have been for basically the entire season. But for the running situation here, the running backs, Jeff Wilson Jr. and Raheem Mostert, it's interesting because if Mostert does not play, I think Jeff Wilson Jr., even against a tough 49ers defense, is like a mid to low end RB2. Mostert does look like he's going to play. So I'm going with maybe a flex play for Jeff Wilson Jr., maybe at best.
I'm not starting either of them if they're both playing. So San Fran is the best run defense. So mix in the fact that, okay, there's the revenge narrative here for Mostert and Wilson and, you know, San Francisco East in Miami with Mike McDaniel there. But I just don't see a situation where if both of them are in that they're both going to warrant enough volume to justify playing them against the best run defense in the league in San Francisco. They're both sits for me.
On the 49ers side of things, I mean, you got Jimmy G. He had some injury news this week, but it looks like he is going to play and is going to be without an injury tag. So QB2 for me, he's actually been not bad this year, like fantasy-wise. I know he's usually a much better real-life quarterback than he is for fantasy purposes, but fantasy purposes, he actually has been serviceable. Again, two QB leagues probably only, I would say, because, I mean, again, you're only really missing Kyler Murray when it comes to fantasy-relevant quarterbacks this season in bye week trouble in that sense. So you're probably not starting Jimmy G in one QB leagues, but two QB leagues, I think you could do a lot worse than Jimmy G, even against the Dolphins, because they're kind of like middle of the pack against the pass. Christian McCaffrey is, I think, an RB1. It certainly looks like the knee irritation is just that, just some irritation. Looks like he's going to be fine. So you fire him up. We'll see how the backup role plays out, because no more Eli Mitchell means that we'll have to be picking between Davis Price and Mason or Coleman at some point this week. So we'll see. We'll see who the handcuff to roster is probably after this week. But the interesting news for me is that Deebo Samuel, I thought he was out. Okay, I thought he was not going to play. Apparently, he quote-unquote plans to play against the Dolphins, despite having, again, what they call a deep thigh bruise, which sounds very painful. And Deebo Samuel is a guy who relies on that top-end speed to get turn the corner and kind of just outrun guys straight up down the field. So I don't know, man. I really do think that, generally speaking, when Debo's on the field, you do play him. But he's had the hamstring injury, then the thigh bruise. Even if he does play, I don't know, Matt. I might just sit him, honestly.
Yeah, I'm not playing Deebo Samuel anywhere if I have him this week. It's just the usage has been really puzzling, especially since Christian McCaffrey has come into the fold. And not only that, it's just like they barely use him in the passing game, or not that they barely use him, like he's getting targets. When you look at his target share, he has had no less than 6 targets in any game this year, but he hasn't eclipsed more than 57 receiving yards since he's only done it once in the last 4 games. He's had 42, 24, 57, 43. And in those games, yes, he did have, you know, 37 rushing yards last week against Arizona. But the week before, 27 rushing yards with 24 receiving yards. Like, it's just not there for me. Only 43 receiving yards last week. No touchdowns since since October 9th against Carolina. That's a long time ago. He's a sit for me, especially coming off the injury. It's not working for me right now. Brandon Ayuk is the guy to play, and George Kittle is an absolute must start, because Miami, not good against opposing tight ends.
Yeah, we live in a world where production out of tight ends is extremely scarce. So I think you are starting George Kittle pretty much most weeks going forward, despite his past results, just because he's George Kittle. And yeah, Brandon Ayuk, I feel like he gets overlooked to a certain degree, but I think generally speaking, he is he's still going to be an every week start, like even if it's a lower end start. Like, he had 5 receptions for 65 yards against the Saints, and it's actually one of his worst performances, which is crazy, right? Like, so if you're in a standard league, maybe Ayuk has less value, but if you're in a half or full PPR league, boy, you're loving the usage that Ayuk has in the San Francisco offense. Let's go to Chiefs at Bengals. And we've answered a lot of the questions about the Bengals this week just because of Joe Mixon. He had not been cleared for the concussion stuff as of last night, I believe. So if he does get cleared, it's possible he gets cleared. But I think what you said when we were doing the text line questions at 590-590 earlier on, I think you're right in that it's pretty likely he doesn't play. So especially with this game being one of the later afternoon games, just plan as though he is not playing. And if that's the case, then I think you can feel okay about Samaje Perine, because he clearly is used in the passing game, whereas oddly Mixon is not, right? So it's kind of a weird change from the starter to the backup and how they're used in the passing game. But either way, just keep that in mind. Joe Burrow, QB1, you're good with there. And Ja'Marr Chase, apparently he will play, according to Adam Schefter. With the hip fracture, he missed about a month, and he is going to play against the Chiefs today. So I think if he plays, kind of like DeAndre Swift, I feel like, yeah, you pretty much have to start Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, you got to start him. I would temper expectations after he was on crutches and everybody thought that he was going to be done for the year. Like, it was a hip injury. It's not insignificant to come back from. I do like T. Higgins more this week. And I want to give everybody out there a little stat about the Chiefs defense.
Okay.
They have allowed 6.7 catches and 47.8 receiving yards to opposing running backs per game this year. So whichever running back it is, I don't think it's going to be Mixon. I think he's going to get held out again. I think if Samaje Perine is the guy, I think he is in like high-end RB2 territory this week.
On the Chiefs side of things, beyond Travis Kelce, just if you drafted him, be thankful because he has been so, so good. Beyond Travis Kelce, though, I mean, you know, I guess there's room to start Juju. He came back after the concussion, kept him out in week 11. So in week 12, he had 3 targets for 38 yards and 0 touchdowns. I imagine he will see the target share tick upwards a teensy bit this week. So I guess he's maybe a flex play for me, or maybe even a WR3 if you're a little more bullish. But beyond him, obviously Patrick Mahomes, you're starting on a week-to-week basis. But Isaiah Pacheco, I suppose, is the only other like slam dunk start. He's maybe like an RB, like a middling RB2. It depends on how much you think the Chiefs are going to run the ball, right? Because Isaiah Pacheco is very good, and he carried the ball a lot last week. He touched the ball 22 times, but still, I think that might change against the Chiefs. I got him as a mid-tier RB2.
Yeah, and I kind of have him in the same. That's a workload-based RB2.
Right, right.
And you know, since he's been really good against the run, 21st in points per game, when you look at Cincy across the board, they've been a much tougher defense than I think most people would think that they have been. Like 29th most points to opposing quarterback, 21st most points to running back, 28th most points to wide receivers, and 18th most points to tight ends. Now, they haven't played the Kansas City Chiefs yet, so do we throw all of that stuff out the window? Probably not, but I do think that Juju has some like wide receiver 3 value here, because Patrick Mahomes tends to look his way a lot, and he's been able to make plays when he has had the ball in his hands. But other than that, I agree with you. It's Pacheco, it's Kelce, it's Mahomes, and to a lesser degree, Juju, and that's probably it. I'd be curious to see if Melvin Gordon is made active for this game. Jerick McKinnon was a little banged up. It looks like he's going to play, but they did sign Melvin Gordon to the practice squad, and I wonder if he gets activated for today. I don't know if they had to activate him yesterday. They may have,
right?
Unless there's an injury, but I'd be curious to see what happens with him going forward.
I am going up against Travis Kelce and Derrick Henry in this must-win league. So please pray for me, please.
I just traded Travis Kelce in my dynasty.
Okay.
I'm out of
for
the
what?
Playoffs.
What'd you get back?
I got J.K. Dobbins, Pat Freiermuth, and Jerry Jeudy back in the deal.
Okay.
My team needed to rebuild. You know, Travis Kelce is one of two things. He is the player that retires on your roster, or you make a trade for him and almost never get equal value back because of his age.
Because of his age,
it's just the way that it works. I feel like I did pretty well in that deal, especially getting a young tight end back and getting Dobbins, who I still think is going to be the guy in Baltimore. He's just too good. He just needs to stay healthy. And I really love Jerry Jeudy, despite Russell Wilson sucking.
Yeah, those three guys are all very, very talented young players. It's true. You're probably never going to get an exact good return for Kelce just because of the age, right? Like people are always going to say, oh, he's going to fall off next year. And then he doesn't, I guess, right? So
he got better this year when he was supposed to fall off because Tyreek Hill wasn't there.
Yeah, wild stuff. Let's continue our start sits. Just 3 more to get to, so we'll boogie through these ones. Chargers at Raiders. Let me just say, you can probably start basically everyone on both teams, right? Like you can start Herbert. You're obviously starting Austin Eckler. You're starting Keenan Allen because he's healthy now. No Mike Williams. He is out, which means you can start Joshua Palmer. And I know Gerald Everett has been banged up, so you know, even if he does play, I would stay away from Everett. And I don't know if that necessarily means DeAndre Carter in his place, but definitely you're starting Keenan Allen, Joshua Palmer, Eckler, and Herbert. And on the Raiders side of things, Carr has been decent in the last couple of weeks. Like in the last month or so, he has been okay. So I would still say QB2 despite the Raiders' record. But still, Derek Carr, Josh Jacobs, if he plays, obviously because of the monster week he had last week, including the 80-plus yard walk-off touchdown in overtime, which was insane. And you're starting Davante Adams too, right? Obviously, Davante Adams has been a target monster in Vegas, and I don't expect that to change.
No, I don't either. He's an easy start for me. Matt Collins is the interesting one here. So as a flex play, back-to-back weeks of 52 or more yards. Last week, he had a touchdown. Josh Jacobs isn't going to get the same workload as he did last week. It's just not going to happen. So I do wonder if they involve Hollins a little bit more. He's had 5 and 9 targets the last 2 weeks. The Chargers defense has been susceptible to the big play. I do believe that still remains the same this week. Matt Collins is a very, very, I think he's one of those high ceiling, low floor plays in flex if you're looking for a win and you've got a nice floor on the rest of your lineup.
Let's get to the Sunday nighter, Colts at Cowboys. And for the Colts, probably a short conversation because I think you can start Jonathan Taylor, but you're tempering your expectations because Dallas is a pretty good rush defense. So you're maybe a mid-tier RB2 for Jonathan Taylor for me. And WR3 statuses for Michael Pittman Jr. and Paris Campbell. Maybe like a higher-end WR3 for Michael Pittman and a lower-end WR3 for Paris Campbell. But ultimately, I think you just don't expect too much from the Colts this weekend because the Cowboys have been so good all season long, especially against the teams they're quote-unquote supposed to beat. And on the Cowboys side of things, we did kind of talk about this when we did the text line questions. Ezekiel Elliott, Tony Pollard, probably both RB2s because the Cowboys do love to run the ball. I think you can still start Dak Prescott every week. The Colts defense actually is pretty good, but all things considered, even though he did have a couple of untimely turnovers last week, I think Dak Prescott is still someone you can start. And CeeDee Lamb is an every week start, I think, regardless. But again, you temper your expectations. I'm so afraid of saying WR1s just because WR1 carries with it like 15 to 20 points. And You can hope for that from CD, but you never 100% know, which is why I say like higher end WR2 for CD Lamb for me, and then Dalton Schultz, a little touchdown dependent, but because he doesn't really get targeted outside of the red zone too much, Matt, but that's kind of where I fall on the Cowboys.
Yeah, that's fair. Michael Gallup is an intriguing flex play. The only hesitation I have, and it's the same thing with CD Lamb, and also why I agree with your wide receiver two designation for him, is that the Colts are the best team against opposing wide receivers. They are the best in terms of points per game given up to opposing wideouts. And that's been a tough slog for teams that have to play the Indianapolis Colts. And this Dallas offense, even though we expect more from it, still feels like it's missing a little bit of an edge. They don't throw as much as they did before, just because they run the ball a lot. Agree with Pollard and Zeke getting that type of work. I think the one key here is this does feel like a sack fest for the Dallas Cowboys defense against Matt Ryan. I feel like if you are, when we don't talk about defenses a lot, and I'm sure the Cowboys are not available, but if you have them and you're deciding between them and someone else, don't decide, just take the Cowboys and don't even think about it.
Let's wrap up with our Saints at Bucks start sit Monday night's game. And on the Saints side of things, it's pretty much Chris Olave and Alvin Kamara. And you and I both have the same amount of touchdowns as Alvin Kamara, which is a zero so far this season. So Alvin Kamara, still, he's an RB2 against the Bucks defense, which has been okay so far this season. But I don't know. It hasn't been super inspiring on either side for either of these teams. So Kamara and Olave, probably the only guys you can start. If you're really desperate at tight end, I guess you can start Juwan Johnson, but that's probably it. Even if you're really desperate, there's probably a better option on the waiver wire. Kamara, Olave. On the Bucks side of things, I guess it's Brady, White, Godwin, Evans. But they're all kind of QB2s, RB2s, especially for the wide receivers. Like, one of them will be okay, and one of them will probably be just, like, more middling. And it's kind of hard to really parse out which of those guys it'll be. I'm guessing Godwin's the better start, but you hope for more from Mike Evans.
Yeah, you really do. And, the Saints haven't been great against opposing wide receivers. They rank 11th. But Godwin's coming off the big week last week, and he kind of cannibalized Mike Evans. So that means that Mike Evans is going to have a big week this week, yeah, doesn't it?
It does feel like that.
That's usually how it works. But I do agree on that. And, you know, Tom Brady has just been so disappointing this year. Like, the off-field stuff is, you know, it's obviously none of my business. And I'm sure that has affected his play. But I don't know, historically, especially as a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he hasn't played all that well against the Saints. Is there something about this matchup historically that leans itself to whoever is the away team usually plays really well and the home team doesn't, and it's super, super strange. Curious to see how the RB rotation works. My guess is one series on, one series off for White and Fournette, but I think that White has the higher upside here.
Yeah, as far as Brady goes, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. And as far as Rashad White goes, you want him to take over the backfield. Like, you want him to, right, Matt? It's just he probably won't as long as Leonard Fournette is there.
it's hard to say that he will, honestly, but I do believe that he does have the higher. I think just at this point in his career, he's just the more explosive player.
Yeah, I think so too. He's a younger guy. We'll see how much he gets worked into the game plan on Monday night. But that does it for the start sets. That's Matt Marchese. Matt, best of luck to your fantasy team this weekend. Austin, to your team as well. Best of luck to everyone out there listening. Thanks for being alongside us. We'll answer all of your text line questions at 590-590 right after the show in a couple of minutes. But again, have a great week 13, everyone. You've been listening to The Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.